We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for Focus, Harriet Williamson, our technical director today, Kyle Mabry. On the program today, we open the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. One topic we'll take up this morning, the switch from the food pyramid to the dinner plate. The new dietary icon called My Plate represents a simple way to think about what we're eating. Vegetables and fruit should make up half the plate. The other half should contain protein and grains. Listeners, we look forward to your phone calls and email messages. Here are the phone numbers. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. And again, the phone numbers, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Hi, welcome back.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. It's warm already.
I know. Boy, that's something else we could talk about today in terms of keeping hydrated and
yes. And
foods to help you cool down and stay cool.
Yes.
But let's begin with this new dietary icon called My Plate. It was unveiled last week. Do you like it?
I really like it. There's been a lot of controversy about the pyramid, the different types of pyramids, and a lot of confusion for people with the pyramids, especially when the pyramid was sort of switched and turned on its side several years ago, and then it got to be a little more confusing, which we can talk a little bit about kind of the mm-hmm. history of the food guides and what the U.S. dietary systems have looked like. But, you know, one of the, I guess, talking points that we use as dietitians a lot when we work with people and work with groups is to visualize what you're going to eat, you know, visualize what your plate's going to look like, which we've talked a lot about here. And so I think that message has kind of come through now back to the government as well. And the idea that, basically just looking at what you're eating and trying to eat, particularly this whole focus on fruits and vegetables, taking half that plate. And if we look at the My Plate system, the way they've set it up, it's even heavier on the veggies and the fruits, which is really what we mm-hmm. want in terms of weight management. And so looking at that half your plate as produce really is a simple thing for people to understand, makes a lot of sense to people, and it's easy for kids to grow up with and understand too. So I think this is a way that it does reinforce what the new dietary guidelines are saying, and we can talk a bit about that this morning as well. And I think what we need to do with nutrition is get back to really just simple ideas on how to eat, because if it gets too confusing, people get very frustrated. And I think I hear that a lot, the frustration of should I do this now or do that now? And I think if you base what you eat on this idea that you're going to get a variety of foods, you're going to try to eat at least half of your meal as produce, that's a simple thing that we can all grasp.
Yeah. So the plate that the government has designed, this icon, it's actually split into four sections: fruit, vegetables, grains, and protein. And then a smaller circle sits beside the plate for dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And the grains recommendation is that half be whole grain. Are there other recommendations that come with this setup? You mentioned the new dietary guidelines, relatively new, released by the government in mm-hmm. January.
Yeah, some of the other recommendations that come along with this is, like you mentioned, eat half your grains as whole grains, the idea being that you're going to have 100% whole wheat bread or 100% whole grain cereals, things like that as some of your grains that you're going to be eating. The other recommendations with your fruits and veggies, there aren't any as many recommendations in terms of necessarily how many cups. We still want to shoot for, you know, 2 or 3 cups of each a day as a general guideline, but they've really kind of taken out a lot of the recommendations of servings and amounts, and the focus hasn't really been on that. So it's the idea that you are going to figure out how to purchase the fruits and vegetables, what kinds to have, making them a variety. The other recommendation within these guidelines of My Plate is to eat a variety of different foods within the food groups. And, you know, that's one of the focus areas with proteins, for example, is to eat protein from a variety of different sources. And then right now on the website, there's not as much specific information on the different food groups, but there will be come fall. They're adding a lot more information, but there are sample meal plans and, you know, kind of the focus on thinking about, yes, eating meat, but also eating legumes and nuts and seeds and things like that.
And I think it is also worth mentioning here that on this plate, grains and vegetables, actually, I suppose if you put them side by side, they'd make up more than half the plate, fruits and protein a little less.
That's exactly right. And that would vary as well depending upon someone's goals. So, for example, if someone was trying to gain weight or get stronger, then they may want more, even more grain or more fruit, which has higher calories. Both of those carbohydrate sources are going to be higher calorie carbs than vegetables. And for those trying to lose weight, maybe, you know, a large portion of the grain that's listed here, shown here, might be a little too much. So it might be that, you know, those veggies are going to have to make up a little bit more. But the general idea, that way the plate's set up, kind of plays into the idea that we still want 5, 6, 7 grains for most of us most days, and maybe 3 or so of those being whole grains, which is what our kind of dietary guidelines put together as well. And one thing to think about for people, and just sort of a general rule which follows along with this, is, again, if you sit down to a full meal, you can easily do that. You can divide your plate pretty much in quarters and get your fruit and veggie and grain and protein, maybe have some milk to drink or yogurt or some dairy. And then for snacks, a good recommendation is just to combine 2 food groups. Be pretty simple. And if you're trying to balance that out, you may not get, of course, 4 food groups in a snack, but you certainly might have an apple with a few nuts or something like that. So the idea can follow through with snacks as well as meals, the thinking of combining different food groups and trying to get more variety.
Yeah. Another thing that the government wants us to think about is sodium. And this is a big concern. So how do we go about that? The salt shaker on the table isn't so much a problem. So what do we need to look out for?
Well, fortunately, a lot of food companies are lowering their sodium content of a lot of processed foods, which is great. That's where we tend to get, I say we get most of the sodium from processed foods like canned foods and packaged foods and things like that, and when we eat out. And so those are 2 areas that there's been a lot of interest in trying to encourage both food manufacturers and restaurants to lower the sodium content, because that's where we have not as much control. Like you're saying with the salt shaker, if you put a teeny bit of salt on something or take a pinch and put it in a recipe, that's really not too much. That's fine. But when we're eating out or choosing packaged foods, that's really what we want to look at. So one of the recommendations that makes sense is if you're eating a packaged food, let's say you're eating ravioli, canned ravioli, for example, which is commonly eaten and easy and not that expensive. So if you're eating that food, then maybe you pair that with other foods that don't have sodium added. So if you eat ravioli, if we looked at the My Plate situation, you'd have a grain, you'd have pasta, wouldn't be a whole grain necessarily, could be, but generally not, and you'll have some protein if it's a meat ravioli. So you have your protein and your grain taken care of. And then if you look at the My Plate, say, well, I'm going to add an orange and I'm going to add some baby carrots. So that's my meal. So you're adding 2 things that don't have sodium or very little. And even if you're eating 1 high sodium food, you're balancing it out with others that don't have as much sodium. And this is, you know, that's a real challenge and a real concern. You know, one thing we're looking at, I do some work on the board with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and we're looking at, really, there's been, you know, a big push to try to enhance the food that's the nutritional content of the food that's available in food pantries and through the food bank and so on. And, you know, one of the big challenges is the sodium in there, because a lot of the food that can be, can be in pantries and hold for a while is going to be canned or packaged foods. And so the more fresh produce we can get in as well, the better, because even if someone's getting some packaged foods, and just in our American way of living, we tend to eat things that are fast, and we like to eat very quickly. And so that's going to be one of the, you know, goals to look at. And I think from a standpoint of sodium, there's really a lot of concern about that now, because we know that as people, if they tend to be a little bit more overweight, which, first of all, we tend to gain weight as we get older. Secondly, just our population in general. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know we've gained weight as a population. Then that puts more, a little more stress on the body, and obviously more problem with blood pressure for some people. And so the sodium becomes more of an issue, because maybe there's already another predisposition.
Yeah. Also, it's an issue for the very young.
Right.
We're seeing children, very young children, and then through 18, one-third are considered obese.
Right, right.
And this was kind of interesting. I read recently that the Department of Agriculture reported that the top three main calorie sources, this is really shocking, the top three main calorie sources for children ages 2 to 18 are: 1, grain-based desserts.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2, pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, soda and sports or energy drinks. So if that's what our children are used to, how do you make the change? And
right,
this is, it's an issue for us, those of us who are getting older, mm-hmm. who are in middle age and beyond. But also it's very important for the very young.
Right, right. And I think some of that, if you think of those types of foods, a lot of those foods are foods eaten on the run, or quick foods, or those kinds of things. And even this whole concern, you know, this kind of concern that we're looking at more closely again with school lunches and things, because a lot of kids, if pizza's available, that's what they'll eat
mm-hmm.
at lunch.
And pizza can be really good.
It can
or
be.
It can be not so good.
Mm-hmm. And it may be that we need to repackage the meals so that if you get pizza, you also get a fruit and a veggie on your plate or something like that, as opposed to just getting two pieces of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are ways that we can look at doing that. But hopefully this change over to this My Plate, which people can see and understand, will also be much easier for kids to understand. And if that's one of our goals, is to try to teach kids in school and teach kids that they know how to eat this way, and they go home and say, hey, where's my fruit or where's my vegetable? And that might spur parents to make sure that they're balancing it out. And it may be that the kids need to carry it over to home as well as it coming from the parents. So,
yeah. Well, what are the recommendations for children, let's say around 4 months of age, as they begin to try solid foods and juices, because we know that our tastes are shaped when we're very young?
Right. And the recommendation there for starting these foods is to make sure that you're not going by the temptation that we have to say, oh, it needs to be sweet. It doesn't need to be sweet for babies. You know, they're very, very happy to have green beans and foods that are not sweetened, and this just the natural sweet potatoes and things like that kids, you know, do fine with generally, babies do fine with, and the unsweetened cereals and things like that. And I think about that sometimes when I'll see, you know, one-year-olds toddling around and drinking Kool-Aid and things like that, and I think, well, then they get used to that and they do want that sweetened type food or beverage after they've had it.
Yeah. And we get picky as we get a little older. I mean, when infants mm-hmm. and babies and young, very young children, you know, they seem to do just fine with milk and green beans, and
right.
I suppose also you could make whole grains part of the scene there when
exactly.
kids start to eat whole foods.
Right, right. And I think for a lot of people I work with, when they have kids, that's the time that they do start thinking more carefully about their own nutrition because they realize, I can't tell you how many clients I've had who come in, usually the mother, but may come in and say, you know, I realize I'm giving my kids, I'm so interested in making sure that my child is eating balanced and eating well, but then I'm going to eat whatever I would normally eat. And they'll say, I need to get back to eating that way too. So how can we do that as a whole family, which is really what you want. Sometimes it takes some type of life event, whether it's having a child or being diagnosed with high cholesterol or something, to kind of make us think, whoa, I do need to stop and make some changes here and try to change the way I'm doing things. But the nice thing about this My Plate system is that even if you did nothing else but say half my plate's going to be fruits and vegetables, which is really the main key message from this whole thing, then you're automatically going to eat so much better. So just about everybody's going to eat pretty darn well if you do that.
Yeah. And the grains, too, an important component.
Right.
So, and the protein is sitting in a corner, kind of. Not the main player.
Right. Not the main player. Although I found it interesting. One of the things there, again, there's not that much information on the website yet. And the website is choosemyplate.gov. So if anybody wants to go on there, I think you can get on it either with myplate.gov or the website they're promoting is choosemyplatealtogether.gov. And right now, again, there's still a lot of information from the pyramid on there. But one of the things I found quite interesting was looking at the sample menus. And right now they have sample menus for a 2,000-calorie food pattern. And when you break it down, if you look at the servings of everything they have, so they have a full week of menus. So if somebody's interested in saying, well, I really need some menus here and to look at what I need to be eating, they could look at that. But then there's a nutritional breakdown at the end, and it ends up being 1,975 calories on average, so about 2,000. But the protein based on this really balanced intake is about 96 grams a day. So that's pretty high. That's good. That would be what I would consider to be a good level of protein for the average person. And that's probably going to end up being, you know, a little bit higher than what our recommendations are per person on average. So I think that's good because we do know, you know, with the protein, most people being a little bit higher, they'll feel more satisfied. They might not be tending to eat as much. And, you know, again, adding a little protein might cut down on some of those extra grains that we tend to eat. And that's really the food group most people will go over on, whether it's desserts or cookies or crackers or granola bars or whatever it is. That's the area that we tend to sort of fill up on.
This is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn, and Susan Kundrat is our guest this morning. She's a licensed registered dietitian, and she is a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's also the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics. Listeners, you can join us this morning with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call now from a listener in Lafayette, Indiana, on line four. Good morning.
Good morning. Would nuts, perhaps a bit of cheese, be a more successful filler for a snack?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. You know, there's a lot of data now to indicate that for most of us, if we have a bit more protein, that's more satiating. It's more satisfying. The thing about nuts and seeds, they both work really well. They both tend to be quite high in calories. And so what I recommend people do is they might take 2 tablespoons of nuts and mix it with an orange, something like that, where you're still getting the bulk and you're getting more food. But at the same time, you have fiber and you have some protein with it and you have some fat. So your body really knows you ate. I think other proteins that maybe are leaner, let's say even an egg or a few slices of turkey or something like that, adding that to a snack is another good way to do it. But yeah, you know, a slice of cheese is great, or an ounce of cheese or something. Cheese and nuts tend to be foods that really work well that way. They also tend to be foods that for many people, their servings are way out of line as far as the amount. So we just need to be aware of what an ounce of cheese is. And you know,
I found, I'm not sure how well known it is, that though most cheeses seem to have very little flavor, the Parmesan does, and it's somewhat lower on the fat.
Mm-hmm. Parmesan can be a great option for cheese. And like you say, because it is strong, you know, can give you some good flavor, that works out great. Even something simple, let's say if you had a snack where you had just a maybe just a half a cup of whole grain pasta, which we're trying to get more whole grains, and you sprinkled some Parmesan on that, and you had that again and a few baby carrots or something. That's a great snack, and you're going to feel satisfied, and it's going to taste good to you. And I think that's the other issue with this whole, you know, no matter what kind of plan the government comes up with or what kind of recommendations, we know that people need to feel satisfied, and they need to feel like the food tastes good to them. And so we got to make sure that there is enough fat and there are enough foods that have enough flavor that we're going to enjoy eating.
In the pitched battle against salt everywhere, what do people do? How do people get any soup, all of which is labeled at 480 milligrams per serving, which seems to be some kind of magic limit?
Mm-hmm.
Is there such a thing as a salt? Or for that matter, a healthful pizza?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you think about moderation. And again, the best option for a soup is if you make it yourself, because then you can control the sodium that's in it, but that's not always feasible or easy to do. And so if you're choosing a canned soup, then you look and monitor and choose the lowest sodium version you can. There are lower sodium versions out now that are pretty good too. And another option for that is to even, you know, take your canned soup that might be 480 or 500 or 600 milligrams of sodium, and you take that and you add in an extra cup or two of frozen vegetables, and you cook, you know, you heat that up together. So what you're getting is a lot more food for the serving, without adding extra sodium. So there are ways that you can kind of take that as your base, maybe add some other things to it that won't add sodium but are really good for you. And then what you've got is you count maybe two servings instead of one and things like that.
And the healthful pizza?
Well, the healthful pizza,
that
too.
That comes in four figures.
Yeah. Most frozen pizzas are going to be quite high. And so
it's
if
really
you can.
Terrible stuff.
Right. And so, you know, that's an area where, again, we have a lot of different you know, pizza crusts that you can buy that aren't as high in sodium, and you can add some sauce that's not as high in sodium,
right.
and add veggies and things like that. And again, those things take a little bit longer, but that's what we're trying to encourage people to do, is prioritize nutrition in a way that even if you take 20 more minutes out of your day, most people could do that, and that could make a huge difference, particularly on the sodium and fat end.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. What we try and do at our house is we get a pre-made crust.
Mm-hmm.
We buy a can of tomatoes, no salt added. We put vegetables on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we choose a skim cheese to put
sure.
on the top.
Perfect. And that's good. And that way you're... You know, you're getting three food groups taken care of there, and, you know, so you're doing a great job, and it doesn't have to be that high in sodium.
And then if you have a salad,
right,
you're doing pretty good.
If you have a salad with that, maybe you have a fruit, and that's a pretty darn good, and not very high in calories. I mean, if we go back to some of the recommendations from the national recommendations with the dietary guidelines that have come out and how this MyPlate is going to, you know, work within that. One of the key goals there is to enjoy your food but eat less.
Yeah. Do you think there'll be a change coming in terms of food labeling?
Well, there have been some changes with food labeling, and that may come too, because that's another area that can be really confusing for people, is to understand the labels. I mean, I think we've come a long way with food labeling in that. You know, we can find what we need to find on the label. It does take a little bit of time. I would be hopeful that doesn't change too much, because people now kind of know where to look for things.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be great to see would be maybe an icon at the bottom of the food label that showed this MyPlate and showed where this food fit in. So if you had a serving of this food, for example, you're going to hit these different food groups or something like that, which, again, would be a good reinforcement to how someone's eating.
Let's take some more calls. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if you could speak to school lunch program, because I have found, and I know many, many parents are very frustrated that we've, from birth, basically, taught our children, you know, and taught them good eating habits, provided them with good nutrition. Then they go off to school, and even if something is taught in the classroom, they get a completely different message by what they're served in the cafeteria. And it's, you know, a lot of, there are no whole grains there. The, you know, parents are told if you have to buy the fruit in the syrup to rinse it, they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of carbs and sodium and all these things. The food is manufactured at one school, you know, in the morning and then shipped out to the other schools. So, you know, getting your kids to eat green beans is one thing. Getting your kids to eat green beans have been sitting around for an hour and a half, 2 hours is quite another.
Yeah.
So I just wondered, is anyone addressing this at all?
Well, I think you bring up a lot of really important points. And one of the challenges I know that I've seen in the schools as well is that I think is, a concern and a disparity is that I see a lot of the parents who are more concerned and maybe have the resources and the education, a lot of their kids take their lunches because they can put together a healthy lunch and their child eats better in general. And then a lot of times the kids that don't have the resources or aren't able to do that end up eating the school lunch that may or may not be as healthy. And so I would say that there certainly has been, you know, a big push to try to enhance the school lunches. And I've seen many districts that have done a great job of doing that. And sometimes they're partnering with a food company in the area or something like that, because it takes money to do that. I mean, there's no question it's an expensive endeavor. But I think once things get into play, it's much better. And I know, locally there's been a lot of push there too. And from the national, you know, with Michelle Obama and people trying to increase awareness of this, there's been some more money put into that. And so I think that hopefully we're going to see that trickle down to the systems more. I know there's been in the Champaign district, there's been more interest in that. And I know we've got some people, you know, within the district really behind it. And so that's good. But like you say, some of the challenges are that the food is made one place and shipped to another place. And there may be a decent kitchen at the school, there may not be. And those all pose some real significant problems. So I think the thing that you know, we need to do is try to be as involved as we can and really push for it as well as parents and continue to do that. But I do know that nationally there has been, you know, there is much more going on than there was, I think, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. So that's good. Yeah. It may take a while to get here, but it's good.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. This is Focus, our topic this morning, diet and nutrition. Susan Kundrat is our guest. More after a short break.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's take another call now. We go to line 3, a listener in Urbana. Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to say that I noticed that there's being some effort made to reduce the sodium in cheeses. If you poke around at the packaged cheeses in the supermarket, there's quite a bit of difference in the amount of sodium. But also, my son pointed out to me that cottage cheese was really, really high in sodium. And then I noticed that Breakstone, which has a red package, has a 2% cottage cheese now with 30% less sodium. And it's pretty tasty. And it's even highlighted in this month's Nutrition Action Health letter, when they have at the back of their newsletter, they have bad foods and good foods.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And the Breakstone low sodium, reduced sodium cottage cheese is on the right stuff, and the Bacon Magic, I can't believe this, it's a maple bacon sundae.
Ooh.
Denny's, yes, yes. Ice cream, maple syrup, maple flavored syrup layered with bacon in a sundae. Anyway, one of my inspirations for eating easily and well is Mark Bittman, who has wrote for the New York Times. He doesn't do it anymore, but he would periodically have a column that was called The Minimalist, which was simple cooking with healthy and he had about 2 years ago, and I'm sure you can find it still on the New York Times web, he had 100 simple summer salad recipes.
Okay.
Things like grated carrots and blueberries and sunflower seeds.
That sounds good.
It looks really pretty. There was one with croutons and tomatoes and basil and a dressing. I forget what else it had in it.
Mm.
Things like, I forget where I learned this, grated fresh beets as a salad. It looks gorgeous. You just shouldn't eat too much of it because it tends to have an effect on your digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
And his other suggestion, which I am trying to adopt more frequently, is to use a bed of greens on your plate to put other foods on top of.
Mm-hmm. It's a great idea.
So you don't have to make a fancy separate salad. You can incorporate the salad as part of your meal, and if you want to reduce your carbs, you can do it in part that way by having greens or veggies as the base of your food, in which you put a smaller amount of protein on top.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call this morning. And Mark Bittman, I know the name of one of his cookbooks is The Minimalist. I think it's The Minimalist Cooks Everything. And you can look for that at the library, see if you like it, give you some good ideas, and maybe a place to launch.
Yeah.
Let's take another call now. This is a listener online, too, I think we're going to go to next. Yep, Urbana. Hi.
Hi there. I'm learning a lot from this program, but I need to learn more. I was just diagnosed with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which I'm told is from cholesterol, and I'm single, and today I'm at least getting a start of an idea or where to start, but I'm thinking about something like Nutrisystem or something that kind of locks me into a diet. I just wanted to get your any thoughts you have on all that.
Well, yeah, I think one thing to think about with, changing, anytime we change our diet, particularly in a significant way, if you're going to, start looking at what you need to do for a particular health concern, one question to ask yourself is, how do you want to go about doing it? How involved do you want to be versus having the food kind of prepared for you? So that might be, if you're in a situation where you say, at first, I really just need to get into a swing of eating what I should be eating, but I don't want to necessarily have to think a lot about it. Then a program like Nutrisystem or a program where the food's prepared and ready to go can be really helpful. One thing I'll say is a lot of the programs that have prepared meals and things might also be higher in sodium just because they're prepared meals. But they might be fine for you in terms of fat and things like that. So I guess I would make sure, if you haven't already, meet with a registered dietitian to figure out exactly what your needs are. And then that, the RD could also help you figure out a plan that would work for your needs. Sometimes some of the package plans work great for weight loss, but they're not as great for a particular health concern, simply because they might not be as high in fibers or the right types of fats or things like that that you might need. So that might be helpful as well. Or if you feel like, I really want to make this change and I want to be involved in it, I want to make sure I'm figuring out what foods I need and getting some help with that and putting together plans, then you might be better off to work with the dietitian and get some meal plans going that you can get together yourself, which generally is cheaper. It's less expensive doing it that way. And you get more fresh food, which is good. But for some people, that's not very feasible, depending upon your lifestyle and how much time you have. So I guess I'd start with, you know, kind of asking yourself those questions and making sure you have a real good sense of what your nutrition needs are, so that then you can, you know, better assess what plans might work for you.
Okay. Are there any local alternatives to the prepackaged programs?
Well, there are, depending upon what you're interested in. I mean, there are things like, you know, Weight Watchers and those kinds of things too, which are local groups, as well as having some of the foods that you can purchase that fit into the plan. And there are other programs where you can buy the food and bring it in. There are people locally who prepare foods and can set up different foods that you need. And then there, you know, a lot of times when I work with clients, we'll set up a plan that includes some packaged foods because they're not going to have time to eat everything. And we can figure out which type of packaged foods that you can just buy at the store would fit into your plan. And so I guess there's all kinds of ways, you know, of doing that. But, you know, looking at something like, you know, the packaged products can be a very big help too. Again, it's more expensive generally, so it probably depends on how much you want to pay as well.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning, and we wish you the best. And I would think that a meeting with a registered dietitian set up maybe through your doctor, your health plan, would be a very good investment.
Right. That would be a good place to start. I think anytime there's any kind of, you know, medical concern, particularly something new that you're dealing with, that can be very overwhelming. It can be kind of confusing to figure all that out. And so that is a, you know, really good time to meet with a registered dietitian and get a sense, just to take the stress off in terms of what you need to be doing, and to find a practical way to get things done that's not too confusing, I think is really helpful.
Let's take another call. This is a listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Good morning. I did print out the Mark Bittman 100 Easy Summer Salads when it appeared in the New York Times, and they are great. And some of them are just, you know, one sentence of instructions.
That's
know,
nice.
Just assembling, you know, just kinds of vegetables. But it's very handy to have. But my question is about labeling, product labeling. And there was this huge effort to get the content of foods in the product labeling on every package, and that was a great effort that succeeded. But America never went metric all the way. And so all of those amounts, sodium, sugar, you know, they're all in grams and milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the typical shopper going through the grocery store, using grams and milligrams is useless. They don't know how much that is, and they don't, you know, they just don't know how to convert that to teaspoons and tablespoons or something. And I applaud the effort to get the labeling on the packaging, but I think a lot of it is just wasted effort.
Well,
so I'm just going to hang up and listen offline to your comments. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your call. I think that what, you know, the comment you bring up is a good one, in that it does become very confusing. For example, there are ways, and maybe this is something we could put on the website here too, but there are ways that you can make more sense of some of these labeling. For example, 5 grams of fat equals 1 teaspoon of fat. But if you don't understand that, you can't visualize what 5 grams is on a label.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a teaspoon of sodium, or teaspoon of salt, I should say, is about 2,300 milligrams of sodium. So if you look on a label of sodium, look on a label and it says it's got 1,100 milligrams or something, I automatically think, oh, that's a half a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Because that does help. And then, of course, we're going to find milligrams in all of our nutrients like calcium and vitamin C and things like that. But that's a good point. I mean, it does become more confusing that way. And I think we have, you know, if we can look at it in terms of the general daily guidelines and just the percentages that this product has, that makes it a little easier, because we know that something has, 10% of your daily value for that nutrient, then you can kind of go by that too. But that brings up the point where, from the listener, that maybe, you know, looking at the label, yes, that's one thing to do. But what we want to look at is what's in the food. really what's in the food mostly. Is it a fruit? Is it a vegetable? Is it a grain? If it's a grain, does it say whole grain or 100% whole grain? And kind of getting back to some of those basic things, and then how does that fit into my plate? And kind of using that as a way to decrease the, you know, confusion about some of these foods.
And the thing that I find useful is you look at something like sodium, and it says, it'll say something like 23% of your of what's recommended.
Right.
But then you look a little higher up, and it says, well, this is 2 servings.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, it might be 2 servings, but I'm going to sit down and I'm going to eat this entire package.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm getting 46% in one little meal.
Right.
So it is, you do have to spend a little time looking at it.
Right. The serving size is key. And that's one of the big recommendations from the dietary guidelines for this, you know, this new guidelines that have come out have been to enjoy your food but eat less and avoid oversized portions. Those are the two top things.
Yeah.
The problem is our normal portion is pretty big in America.
And sometimes like these foods are so calorie dense that the manufacturer is saying this is 2 servings.
Right.
When, you know, if you split that, you know, it'd be great if you were a hummingbird.
Right.
So anyway,
that's
enough of that. Let's take another call. I'll get off the soapbox. A listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
You look good on a soapbox.
The issue in terms of my plate, in terms of sugar, and also, you know, there's certainly strong evidence that nitrates are not good. So is there a position on that?
Well, there are a couple things. One of the recommendations for sugar, it's not really included in the My Plate per se, but it's included in the dietary guidelines, are to avoid sugary foods or sweetened foods, cut down on sweetened foods. And particularly there's a big focus on cutting down on sugary drinks. And you had mentioned, Celeste, the increase in soda intake and juice drinks and things like that. And there was new recommendation that came out last week to discourage the use of sport drinks and energy drinks and things like that. And I think, you know, the thing we need to think about is use them if there's a reason to use them. I wouldn't say energy drinks necessarily. That's mostly just caffeine and sugar. But that's one of the guidelines, you know, drink water instead of sugary drinks, for example, is one of the guidelines to try to cut down on sugar. And there's no place in this My Plate. You know how the food guide pyramid, the original food guide pyramid, had the top fats, oils, and sweets. That was the very top of the food guide pyramid. And there's no place here for that. So it's not saying never to eat sweets or sugar. It's just saying fill up your plate first and then go easy on additional sweets and sugars. But pay particular attention to what you're getting in sugary drinks, and that would include things like lemonade and punch, and you know, adding a lot of sugar to coffee or sweet tea or things like that, because we find that when we look at where sugar comes from in the diet, there's been an increase for many people in terms of liquid sugar, taking it in drinks and things like that. And so, you know, something like a sport drink, if you're working out hard, sweating, playing an activity, yeah, it's appropriate. You'd want to use it. It's actually going to help you in terms of hydration. But for typical people, just to sit down and be drinking sport drinks instead of water, no, we don't need those extra calories.
But in terms of nitrates, nothing's been mentioned in that regard or not?
Well, one of the guidelines for looking at this protein area is to choose more fresh proteins and to choose legumes as well as meats and things like that. And so, you know, we do know as far as nitrates or packaged meats or cured meats or things like that, that I haven't seen a specific recommendation that they've put out yet in terms of, let's say, the percentage of protein that you should try to, you know, keep it to from your total protein intake or anything. But the idea of having more fresh proteins and variety of proteins, which there's always been a kind of a recommendation for more legumes and nuts and seeds and things, but I think that's going to be a bigger focus. And so, for example, I'll give you an idea in the sample meal plan that's online, where they've got online with this. As far as protein foods, there's about 6 ounces in general of protein foods, and most of those are just fresh meats. But there's also an average of 1.5 servings of beans and peas a day. So if you look at, you know, most of us don't get that. So there's much more focus on legumes, again, nuts, beans, things like that, that are going to provide protein, provide fiber, but not necessarily provide anything else in terms of the stuff.
I do think that there has been a specific call for avoiding processed salty foods like salami, for example, or going easy on that. And is there any other guidance in terms of fish?
Well, in terms of fish, we still have the general guidelines of trying to eat fish two times a week or maybe more if you've got high triglycerides, and then, you know, keeping that, you know, monitoring the high mercury fish and those kinds of things. But I haven't seen any particular recommendations that they break fish down in there. But those are areas, I think that's a lot where we need to do a lot of education of what fits into this protein area. And it's not just packaged ham or something. I mean, where there are a lot of foods that fit into that, a lot of ways to get your proteins. And there, one thing that they don't have actually on the website yet, but I know it's been listed as something that they're going to focus on, is also more information on how to eat well as a vegetarian, building a healthy meal, healthy eating for vegetarians, those kinds of things. So I was glad to see that. Not that everybody needs to go vegetarian, but just the idea that more vegetarian meals for most people is going to be a healthy way to go.
Okay, let's take another call. This is a listener in Piatt County on line 4. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'm afraid I'm going to end up being one of those people who discusses their stomach endlessly because they think it's fascinating. But I have had a colon resection 5 years ago, and so I feel like I'm really well, but I still have a lot of stomach trouble, so I classify it kind of as an irritable bowel syndrome with what I look at it now, and I'm also a vegetarian. So if I ate pretty much, if I did eat meat and potatoes, I think my stomach would be pretty happy. So I'm wondering, is there a book that I've missed, or are there sites online for specific stomach problems and trying to eat healthfully without upsetting your whole digestive system?
Yeah, well, like you're saying, a lot of times if you've got particular concerns, sometimes going more fiber or more vegetarian is not always going to work very well for you because it might be hard to manage or to handle. One place I'd recommend is the American Dietetic Association website because they have they put out a series of books, but they have one that I have that I think is really good about you know, nutrition recommendations for different gastrointestinal concerns, but it's real practical. I can't remember the exact name of it, but the American Dietetic Association website is just eatright.org. So it's eatrightalltogether.org, and you can look in the references there or the area where they have their books and materials, and there's some good practical recommendations there. So that might be a good place to start. And then also some of the national organizations, which you've probably looked at online. Sometimes I'll find some good information there too. National organizations for irritable bowel or gastrointestinal concerns, as well, may have some good, you know, some good ideas and recommendations. I think a lot of times with irritable bowel, at least in my experience working with clients, it's very individual. So you might handle something fine, whereas the the recommendations say you won't, but you might. So it's kind of trial and error with which foods work for you. That would be my experience.
You're so right, because of course I've spoken with other people with the same problem, and everybody says, well, I can eat that and I can eat this, and no, I can't eat that. So I realize that it is a way of trial and error. I just was wondering why greens would be real, because I used to love salads. It's really hard now. So why do greens upset a system?
Right. Sometimes different greens are harder to digest, and some will be a little bit more gassy and be a little more difficult to digest. And sometimes it depends. I've had clients who can't handle spinach or other greens if they're fresh, but they just cook them down just a little bit and then they can handle them. So it may be breaking down the starch or breaking down the tissue in the plant a little bit before you eat it. So you could try that with different types of, even just a little, you know, teeny little bit of water to just steam cook it real fast and eat it, or a little bit on the stove. And that might be helpful too.
Okay. Well, I will start at the eatright.org. And thank you so much for your help.
Thanks for your call.
And we have one more caller this morning, and this listener is in Urbana on line 1. Hi.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Okay. I have a question about avocados. I understand that they're kind of fatty, but when I cut an avocado and, you know, you try to save half of it, it's going to turn dark on you, and sometimes it doesn't taste very good. Mm-hmm. So I've been slicing up a whole avocado and putting it on my salads. And, of course, I have a big dinner plate-sized salad because that's most of what I eat in the summer, and I'm enjoying it. But I'm just worried about the fat content. Can you just comment about that?
Yeah. One of the challenges with avocados is that they will oxidize once you cut them. But what I would say is instead of eating, you know, maybe you eat the avocado every 3 or 4 days and you have one. Instead of eating half of one at a time, you eat a whole one at a time. Enjoy it, but you don't have it as often. That's fine because it is a lot of fat, but it's still really good for you. It's a lot of monounsaturated fat, and it just might be that that meal is higher in fat, but that's fine. You're not going to have that every day. And then you still get all the benefit from the avocado, which is just a really healthy food.
Yeah, so. I like it. It's really good. Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. And I think with that, we'll kind of wrap things up for this month on diet and nutrition. And next month, you'll be away. I mean,
right.
You won't be here in the studio with us. And we've got something else planned, so I want to invite listeners to stay tuned, as we say. And we'll talk again about diet and nutrition coming up in July. So do stay tuned. And in the meantime, our thanks very much to licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's also the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and you'll find her online at nutritiononthemove.net.